but excited because I know the big picture. And that is if you're in God's kingdom, you win. And what a horrible, horrible time they had in the first century. No matter how bad we think we have it, we don't have any close to what they were going through at that time. So it gives us great comfort to know that God will win at any circumstance, no matter how bad it gets. So I'm excited. I wish I could say I know everything, but I don't. I don't think anybody today does. But I think we definitely know the big picture. So before we begin this evening in our study, we're going to ask Tony, if he will, to lead us in a word of prayer. Amen. All right, and page number 7, I just gave a few examples talking about symbolism in Revelation. That's really where a lot of the problems come in, is a lot of religious leaders want to become very specific, and more specific, very dogmatic on what the symbolism means, and that's where problems occur. Just like I'm working on a lesson right now on premillennialism, I don't know what's going to be done, but premillennialism, one of the chapters they love is Revelation chapter 20. In the chapter 20, where many premillennialists believe, is that's where you get the thousand-year reign. Trouble is, we're not talking about literal time there, and it's taken out of the context. So we'll study more about that when I get into that on the sermon. But as we look at this booklet now, I have shared an idea from one writer on page number 7, titled Unlocking Revelation. And lengthy reading. Who would like to read that? All right, go ahead, James.
Revelation is written in symbols. So how do we approach such a book? Could we think Revelation wants us to believe there is actually a dragon large enough to draw a third of the stars out of the sky? Or is this a figure of speech? The Bible certainly does not use
Does use.
Jesus, for example, says he is the bread of life. We know he's not literal bread. He says he is the water of life, but we know he's not literal water. Figures he uses to teach us that he's essential to our spiritual life as bread and water is to our physical. The rule of thumb we use in everyday language is that any statement that on its face is absurd or extreme is taken literally is likely intended to be a figure of speech. The sports announcer, for example, may say a basketball player quick as lightning, or that a tight end is like a bullet running down the sideline. We immediately know how to switch from the literal to the figurative. So we come to Revelation with its long list of characters, invented, feared, observed, or extreme, taken literally, and we take them figuratively. So when we come to the book of Revelation, we take some things literally because there really was an island named Patmos and cities named Ephesus and Pergamum. But since most of the books use horses, dragons, land, beasts, locusts, rivers of blood, sun going dark, women standing on the moon, and in the city in the shape of a cube, we will wear our figurative hat most of the time.
All right, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. We often use figures of speech. You know, when we get some heavy rains, and we do get heavy rains when it does choose to rain, when God allows it to rain here, someone might say it's raining cats and dogs. Well, I've never literally seen a cat or a dog come down, but again, so it's a figure of speech. So let's not get bummed by the idea of figures of speech. Now, I like what Homer Haley states, though, on the bottom. So, Larry, you want to read what Homer Haley states on that second point?
One is caution to be careful to avoid explaining each aspect of a symbol. Symbols, signs, and images are used to express ideas. One must look through John's particular vision with the symbols and images and strive to grasp the ideas in the mind of God as he revealed it to John the writer.
All right, and that's why as we started out, we looked at, if you go to page number 8 now, we looked at various means of interpretation. Now, there are other means of interpretation. I just bring that up because oftentimes the way you interpret is the way you're going to look at the passage. And that's why I definitely reject the futurist method, because they look at all in the future, and that would have no value whatsoever to the brethren who are going through that severe persecution in the first century. We'll talk more about that as we get into the letter. So let's go to page number 8. Again, we have a lengthy reading. I'll break this down to a couple or two, three readers. So the first reader, I want you to read from throughout the Bible to where it stops without questioning. 7 is the most outstanding number. So go ahead, Angela, would you read that first section for me, please? Okay, so from that to the next one where it ends, one of the numbers need to be considered 3.5. So from that point where she left off to the next section, go ahead, Clay, do you want to read that for me, please? Okay, now 3.5. Let's see. Susan, what? Oh, yeah, up front. Go ahead. And your first name again?
Melinda.
Huh?
Melinda.
Mine, okay.
This number and its equivalents are used several times in Revelation. Each time the number is used throughout the Bible, it is used of trial, hardship, and testing. 3.5 and equivalent periods are used several times in Revelation. And each time they are associated with a period of oppression. The two witnesses were overcome and slain, and their bodies were left unburied in the streets for 3.5 days during humiliation. A period of 3.5 years is introduced by the seer in association with persecution and trials and oppression. The holy city would be trodden under the foot 40 and 2 months, which is 3.5 years. The two witnesses would prophesy for 1260 days, the same period of 3.5 years, then be put to death. This, likewise, is a period of opposition. The woman who gave birth to the man-child who was forced to flee into the wilderness for 1260 days, or 3.5 years, where she was providentially cared for. The same period is referred to as a time, times, and a half a time, being identical with the 1260 days of verse 6. Both indicate a time of opposition, oppression, and persecution by Satan. This fact leads to the conclusion that just as 7 is a symbolic number for fullness or completeness, perfection, so 3.5, a broken 7, is a symbolic number for a period of trial, persecution, famine, and oppression. The number is used in each instance symbolically, not literally.
And what you have highlighted there, that's my highlights. That's why I gave you those paragraphs. That's what I came to the conclusion. But all I'm trying to show us here is we've got all these different things coming together. Someone said last week their head was spinning. I don't want your head to be spinning when you leave here. I just want you to understand this is not like reading the book of Acts. This is not like reading the book of Colossians. And this book, I say, is often, I will say, ignored. We study the first 3 chapters, in chapters 20 and 21, and then we leave 4 through 19 out of it because that's where all the symbols. Actually, the symbols begin to come in at chapter 6. So my thrust of this study is not that you are going to know all those things, but you are going to know beyond a shadow of a doubt, we win. No matter how bad it gets, our brethren in the first century won, and you and I are going to win. Now, I don't know what the future of America is going to be. It could be good or bad. But I know this, if I'm a child of God, I win. If you're a child of God, you win. Now, you might say, well, how did they win? Because in Revelation chapter 6, they're crying under the altar, those who had been slain for the cause of Christ, how long, O Lord? So in chapter 6, they're crying, how long? Well, then chapter 7 through 19, the Lord shares the answer to that. They would be vindicated. But the thing you and I need to understand, God does not work on my time frame. He does not work on your time frame. But I'll tell you what, if you're not with God, you're a loser. Can't say it any simpler than that. All right, so I just want to point that out because we're going to be getting into some things. I'm not going to know exactly what it is, but understand before we even get into the conflict. Now we have the condition of the churches, chapters 2 and 3. We have God on his throne, chapter 4. We've got the Lamb who's able to open up the seals, chapter 5. And then the conflict begins, chapter 6 through the first part of chapter 20. So 6 through 20, you have the conflict. But before we even get into the conflict, we've got God on his throne, the Son of God, being over his kingdom. Make sense, everybody? Never forget that as we move forward. Let's go to page number 9. Page number 9, and I'll be using a lot of different writers, and when I use them, I will note who it came from. And no, I didn't get permission from them because I'm not selling this material. And I know you're not going to sell this material either, but I'm giving them due consideration as to where I got it from. All right, as we look at page number 9, the first one by Ray Summers. Now, you're familiar, some of you are familiar. Ray Summers, some of these writers are not members of the church. Ray Summers is not a member of the church, but he's got a very good book, and that is Worthy is the Lamb. In fact, I borrowed that book from Jim, and the book he lent me just literally fell apart. You know, as books stay closed for a long time after a while. So I was thankful that Bob found it online, and I got 2 more and gave him a better copy that didn't fall apart. But he's a member of a denomination, which is not relevant. But he has a good point here as we look on page number 9, the top part, page number 9. All right, let's go ahead. Ruth, you want to read that for me, please?
It is in the reign of Domitian that we reach an insistence upon emperor worship, more threatening and more vehement than before. Pliny continues his discussion by stating that Domitian raised himself above all the other gods and chose for his statues the most hallowed sites in the temple and caused entire hosts of victims to be sacrificed for refusal to worship. Hence, it is self-evident under Domitian Christianity had to end the struggle of life or death with the imperial power. A sharp collision was inevitable. The forms of punishment were many. Some were put to death, some were exiled, some were tortured into confession of the divinity of the emperor, and some had their property confiscated. Some received combinations of these measures. All of these is very plainly reflected in the book of Revelation.
Now, the only reason I included that in our study tonight, amongst brethren, there are two positions about the book of Revelation, or at least two major positions about the book of Revelation. There are some very good, sound, scholarly brethren who take the 60 AD, that it was written before 60. There are others, myself included, who take the later date, and that's in the 90s. The first one take the date when Nero was in charge, and remember when he burnt Rome and blamed the Christians. That seems more of a limited persecution, where in the 90s you have a more widespread persecution, and therefore I take that position. You can take whatever position you want on it. We're not going to argue back and forth as to who's absolutely right. We're not going to be dogmatic on those things. Either case, whether you take the 60, which I don't, or you take the 90s, there's persecution against the Christians. More limited in the 60s, more extensive in the 90s. And that's what the Christians are going through in Asia as we look at the seven churches. Mike, do you want to read the next passage, please? The next one we've missed. Yeah. Yes, sir. Now, before you go on, pay attention to this next section. Now, I believe it's written to those in the 90s, those who are going through that persecution. But now look what it is he writes next. Go ahead, Mike.
This message is peculiarly relevant today. The call to choose the eternal rather than the temporal, to resist temptation, to refuse to compromise with pagan materialism, and to place the law of conscience above all demands, to cherish the confidence and ultimate victory for the kingdom of God, not only in the reign of the mission, but also in every other chaotic period of world history, including the 20th century.
Okay, and I love that last little phrase. So again, the principle goes on till this world no longer stands, though it was written to a specific group of people. That's why absolutely I take and ignore the futurist idea. That is downright silly to think that he's going to write a book through John on the Isle of Patmos that's going to talk about the year 2000, 2020, when they in the first century were suffering that severe persecution under Domitian. All right, Ken, you want to read that last little section, please? And I think if you keep those three ideas, you're going to get through it okay. And I don't think brethren here are like that. If you're going to be dogmatic about some symbol, you're going to be hard to live with. You're going to be hard to live with. Because we might come to some differing of conclusions on that symbol, but we better not become a differing of conclusion as to what the ultimate message was. And the ultimate message is what? Yes, ma'am.
Could you use a synonym for dogmatic?
Determined. Stubborn.
Closed-minded, maybe?
Okay, that would work too. Okay. So again, this is the intro. I could have left all of this out, and I was almost tempted to leave all of this out. But I knew if I left it all out, somebody's going to raise your hand and say, what about this? I didn't include everything. There's a lot more that could have been said. I've got books on Revelation, doesn't make it right or wrong, that half the book is the introduction. And the other half of the book is the letter. So you can imagine how much material is in there. But again, I think this is sufficient to give us a jumping point as we move into the book. So we're going to jump right into the questions. I told you, Ruth, we might get there tonight. If I don't let anybody talk, look how fast we go. All right, this is for you to answer now. Just some basic questions to go over what we've already studied. On question one, I said list the chapters in Revelation that contain the following. Another reason I did that, my method for that is to you go to page number two and look in page number two, where you, unless you already know that. You might have known that without page two. But when we talk about list the chapters that reveal the condition of the seven churches, what chapters? Two and three, right? So if you don't have two and three, that's what you should put down there, chapters two and chapters three. B, list the chapters that contain the explanation of the seven symbols. Seven seals, not symbols, I'm sorry, seven seals. Six through eight, right? You have six, but the last symbol, the last seal is broken at eight, is it not? So you have six. And what happens with some of these things, you've got an interval or a lull where some other things are brought up also. But I have six through eight. Now, not the entire eighth chapter. In the beginning of the eighth chapter, you have the seventh seal broken. So it starts out with the seven seals. Then I ask, list the chapters that contain the explanation of the seven trumpets. What starts in chapter eight? What do you have for the closing chapter? I have 11. 11 is what I have. So 8 through 11, not the entire chapter, but 8 through 11, we have the seven trumpets. And then the final seven bowls of wrath, you have one chapter. 16. Chapter 16. And then you have 17, 18, 19, which ultimately shows the victory of God over the enemies that the people were facing. All right. Question number three comes from pages three and four. I don't expect a lengthy, I just want to, basically, I want you to list the five areas we studied. What about question two? Oh, did I go, no, I'm not on, okay, on question number two. That's where we're at. Okay. So what are the five ways that I've listed in the book? I should have put it that way because there are more than five ways. But the ones I've listed, what are the five ways listed in the book that on how to interpret Revelation? What's the first way? Futurist. Futurist is a lot of your friends, if they believe that Christ is coming to set up a kingdom, that's futurist. Because they get that from Revelation chapter 20. They get that from Daniel, the last week of Daniel and the 70 weeks of Daniel. They get that from 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. So when someone talks about a rapture, or when someone talks about the thousand-year reign of Christ, I know what position they hold on Revelation. And that's the futurist, which I don't hold that at all. What's this another one we talked about? Okay, continuous historical, if you looked at that. And again, if you want to read more on that, I would suggest you could go to Robert Harkrider's book. You could go to some of the other books, and they go into great detail on some of these. But that's basically, that tends to focus towards Catholicism, that they incorporate these illustrations and these symbols focused with Catholicism, which, of course, we know that's not what it's focused upon if we take it in its total context. Okay, what's the third one that I listed for us? Philosophy of history. That's symbolic of the forces used in the destruction of the enemies. A lot of people, what I've noticed, combine three, four, and five, but then they settle on five. The fourth one was? Preterist. And of course, that's talking about that the events written in Revelation have already happened. And that's true, except to end of chapter 20 through 22. Because of end of 20 through 22, remember at the end of 20, death and Hades is going to be cast into a lake of fire. Death and Hades still exist right now. And then we have what I believe talking about what the future holds for us. So that's another one. And then the fifth one is what? Historical background. Now, some good brethren, and I put that, not that you have to believe that. Remember, I'm not telling you what to think. My workbook is not sent from God. This is the answer. We're studying together, and these are the conclusions I have drawn. So, yes, I have some bias in the conclusions that I have drawn. And I've developed some of these bias from some of the readings that I have from the book itself and from other books. All right, now, anybody else as we go to question number three? Question number three. According to Farrell Jenkins, and some of you know Farrell Jenkins personally because at one point in time he preached here, but according to Farrell Jenkins, Donnie V. Rader and Robert Harkrider, all three of them, very sound gospel preachers, what is the best method for interpreting? What did they all come up with? The historical background. Now, they said the best, it wasn't say it's an absolute sure thing, but in their understanding, it was the best method to focus upon. Again, I want to preface that. I'm not saying you have to believe that. I'm just saying that's where, and if you went back and read that, they gave reasons why they believe that. So you have that. All right, as we continue on looking at the questions, why does Ray Summers clearly object to the futurist method of interpretation? I'm at question number four. Yeah, it would have, think how silly that would be. It would have absolutely no application. You know, that's not going to help someone who's in Smyrna, who their people are being put to death, or in other places, that I'm going to tell you, here's the message, John. Oh, it's not going to happen for about 2,000 years or 2,000. Doesn't make sense whatsoever. Now, can we still have persecutions today? Sure we can. But it had to be relevant for those people there. Again, I tie that together. We haven't gone there. But in Revelation chapter 6, those who had been martyred, they cry under the altar, how long, O God? They're wondering, how long is this going to happen? John's message from the Lord is telling them, here's what's going to happen. So, yes, I think he's got a good point. Thank you, Daryl. All right, as we go to the next question, as we go to question, let's see, I've lost my place here. Question five. Come on, Leon, keep me on track here. What date is associated with the writing of Revelation? According to those writers, now you could use Art Ogden, who's a preacher. He takes the early date. He takes the 60s. You could use Foy Wallace. Foy Wallace is now deceased, has written many fine books. He takes the early date. He looks at this happening before the destruction of Jerusalem. I believe that's too limited. I agree with a number of people, and therefore, as we look at this question, what do we have the answer to that question from those two writers? Okay, that it was written in the 90s, correct? And again, a more widespread persecution. Now, am I going to argue with you if you take the earlier date? No. The only difference that's going to be is when we get into some of the symbols, you're going to take them literally. I'm going to take them figuratively. You're going to take the measuring of the temple being the literal temple because the temple was destroyed when? AD 70, right? So, if you're thinking it's talking about the literal temple, now I'm jumping way ahead of myself, well, then you're going to take it literally. I believe it's a figure of speech. Just like the 144,000, when it talks 12,000 of each tribe, is a symbolic of speech. It's not talking literally. Just like when it says the 144,000, I don't believe that's a literal number. It's a fullness when we talk about that. Remember I mentioned about the Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know if their position has changed, but I know when I've studied it with them in times past, most of them, if not all of them today, do not want to go to heaven because they believe, according to Revelation, at least this was their position when I studied with them, they believed only 144,000 could go to heaven. And that started from 1936. And therefore, they believe all 144,000 have now passed on and gone there. So when you talk about I'm going to heaven, they have no desire going to heaven. They think they're going to live forever here on this earth. But that, again, is a misuse of revelation. And it's sad because these are sincere people. When I bring up different doctrines, I'm not trying to make fun of the person. I'm just saying the person has been deceived into a false idea. So please understand that. I came out of denomination. So I'm not blaming the people as people. I'm blaming that they have been deceived. Remember, people have to be helped to misunderstand the truth, and I fully believe that. Just like I was helped to misunderstand that baptism was sprinkling. Found out it's not. So that thought. Okay, as we go on, question number 6. How should one approach the symbols of Revelation according to Dr. Stafford, North, and Homer Haley? Yeah, if it's grotesque, like the dragon with his tail sweeping a third of the stars, then we know we're talking about a figure of speech. Now someone said, couldn't God do that literally? God could do whatever he wants literally. We're not going to argue that point either. But that would be a figure. If a third of the heavens were destroyed, this earth would be destroyed. So again, it's a figure of speech. So, and we have to watch out. And I do too. I can get so enamored with one of the symbols that I lose track of the big picture. We want to focus on the big picture. Yes?
I always have it. I don't want to say an issue, but I always not 110% understand the song 10,000 Angels. He could have called 10,000 angels, but he's God, so he would not have had to because he's God. He could have, but why?
Well, I think you're right, but the only reason I would say that he could have called the angels, was that God the Father was behind him regardless of which way, but he's fulfilling God's mission. You're right. In fact, if he called any angels, all he'd need is Gabriel.
But he wouldn't even need
that. No, I agree. All right, anybody else? Okay, let's go on to the next question then. And again, where am I, Leon? Seven. Now you see how I feel when I'm flapping my jaws. 7. Okay. Let's go to number 7 at this time. All right. What stands out in your mind as you reflect Homer Haley's comments on the use of numbers? You say, my mind explodes. What stands out? Daryl? Yeah, it's written figurative.
They would have understood the use of those numbers and what they represented more than we do. We don't think that way, we don't use that way, but it more supports the fact that the book was written figurative.
You're exactly right. I want to go off what Daryl says a couple of things. First of all, I honestly believe those in the first century would understand this a whole lot better than you and I today. Very much so. Second of all, to a much, much, much more limited idea, we use numbers as a symbolic thing too. For instance, one of the places we lived at when we first got married, 1313 Gunderson. What's wrong with that? 13 is used. Now I live in a place that my mailbox is 166. I told Susan, I said, well, if it was 666, I would have to move one door down or something. Again, that's all symbolic, is it not? We look at those things. So again, although back as Daryl said, they understood these different ideas in a greater... And how they did that is because I believe they understood Ezekiel. They understood Daniel. They understood some of the Old Testament prophets who went into some of these things. And a much greater. I got a book I'm reading, I didn't read cover to cover, that talks about symbolism in the Old Testament Revelation. If I'd use some of his book, we'd all be confused. But it's a good book. It causes you to think on these things. All right, let's go to the next question. And that is question number 8, correct? All right. Number 8, how does Ray Summers describe the reign of Domitian? Or Domitian, however you want to say it. severe persecution. Nero had persecution. But I am told, Mike, is this true? Because I know you're a historian. In fact, he was so evil, what little bit I read, and Mike knows a whole lot more about this than I do, that they eliminate a lot of his history, that a lot of things are no longer written because he was such a bad leader. Is that correct or incorrect, Mike?
That's correct.
So again, when you go to study him out, you don't have a whole lot because they kind of wanted to erase his memory as to what he has done. So this is the type of individual we're dealing with. Yes, Gary?
The government under Nero was not government persecution, but a lot of it did spread to the provinces. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 8, Paul said, "We do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure above strength, so that we despaired even of life." Also in 1 Peter chapter 1, we read that book was written to the pilgrims of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. And we read a lot about the persecution that was going on there and in Asia as well.
And you're right. I don't want to leave it that it was just in Rome. You had persecution from the very beginning of the church, initially mostly by the Jews, but then the Gentiles came in. So I'm glad you brought that up. All right, let's finish the two questions before we close out the class this evening. As we go to question number 9, what is Ray Summers' summary of Revelation? What did you put for an answer?
Ultimate victory.
Oh, there it is. If you didn't get anything else tonight, get that. Ultimate victory, regardless of what age it is. You know, as Americans, we sometimes get frustrated as to what things are going on. We're not going into politics. As a Christian, I have ultimate victory. And you look what they were going through. Whatever you and I are going through right now does not even come close to what they were going through at that time, and they stay true. And the last question then will be done for tonight. Question number 10, the three things. What are they? Number 1. Right. You can't take something from Revelation and have it contradict a clear teaching, like, say, from the book of Acts or what Gary said. You know, you can't do that. Well, you can do that, but it's not going to be good Bible study if you do that. You're going to draw some wrong conclusions. Number 2, remember what? Don't get caught up and say, you know, when we get this dragon and these crowns and we want to say, well, this crown belongs to who? I've got page after page after page. They might be right, they might be wrong, but the big picture, does it really matter? They were opposers of Christians. They had a short time of victory, but eventually they're going to lose. You see, So I'm excited about this study. You know, for years, I kind of avoided any kind of public. When I do Revelation, I had a whole series on Revelation, but it was from the pulpit, so nobody could say anything. You know, they had to talk to me afterwards. By the time I was done, nobody wanted to talk. They wanted to go home. So that. And last question, that last point, remember not what?
Don't
forget the importance of to those whom it was written. All right, so next week, start on page number 11. We actually get into chapter 1 next week.